Hello, friends, and welcome to Pod Return to the Waking Sands. We are a Final Fantasy XIV companion podcast where we explore the lore and story of Hydaelyn and beyond. My name is Jen, and I'm joined by my co-host and researcher.
I'm Levi.
Hello, Levi.
Hello, Jen.
Hello.
Today, Jen is drinking strawberry lemonade.
Yeah.
She made herself. At least she bought lemonade and put strawberries in it herself.
Culinary fucking mastermind over here.
Today, we are continuing on with the Crystal Tower series. We are on now to Circus Tower. But first, what happened last time, Jen?
No. Last time, we weren't even in the Crystal Tower. We had figured out a way in. So we finally decided to talk to this guy that's been chilling on the street corner in Mordona for, I don't know, months. And he was like, you know what? They're doing some cool shit down at the St. Quinox Vine. You should probably check it out. I'm telling you this because I'm a good guy. So we do. And Ramos was like, I don't know about that guy. That's super weird that he knows what's going on. But yeah, that's exactly what's going on. We're trying to get out of this fucking huge ass crystal tower that's suddenly appeared on the landscape. And we can't get in. But we need to. Because, as evidenced by our experience with the binding coils, we have elegant tech just lying around. It's someone's going to grab it. Someone is going to make nefarious use of it. And we got to lock that shit down. So there were these four elemental barriers that we needed to go get, like, perfect fucking examples of those elemental crystals. Then we had to find the matching version of ether sand that Cid could turn them into fangs that didn't stab shit. They are just shoved into the barrier like a banana.
Still hung up on those fangs.
Still stupid. Jen. We made a fan. You make a fang to stab. Nobody stabbed anything. It will bother me forever. Okay. So we do that.
Let's
and we
stab in your heart, Jen.
Okay. Kinda. But we do that. And we get in, and it's not even the tower yet. It's the Labyrinth of the Ancients, which is just one big fuck you on hopefully getting rid of the riffraff before you actually get to the tower. So we dealt with the riffraff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
One small note, Jen. Great job, but it is evidenced by threats such as the Ultima Weapon, not the coils, because the coils are super, super secret.
Right. Nobody knows. We know.
Yes. Rambrose, does he know? He got involved too, didn't he? Yeah, I'm pretty sure that probably they consulted Rambrose at some point during the Coils series.
Yeah, I mean, it was like, by the end of it, despite this being like a super top secret, need to know sort of situation, a lot of people knew.
Sound familiar? Maybe like some other super secret, supposedly, elegant op? This one, Jen.
Okay. I was trying to be like, what's another one?
This one.
Okay. Yes.
So we do those things. After we clear out the Labyrinth of the Ancients, we regroup at Noah's base camp at St. Quinox Find, and Rambrose starts us off with a recap of what just happened, just like Jin did. Thank you, Jin.
Thank you, Rambrose. Okay. So, yeah. So this is kind of wrapping up the Labyrinth of the Ancients thing. So Rambrose is like, this is what we did. This is what we found out. You know, it's like when we got in there, it felt like everything had been reawoken. Everything was like active and doing the stuff. Like this is like totally on purpose. And it's basically decided that we need to go in there and turn everything off. Return everything to dormancy. And before we can move to the next step, Cid is going to examine the tower for additional defenses and shit like that.
With Biggs and Wedge.
Because they do the same. They're like, but what about us? And he's like, well, yeah, you're also doing it. So they're doing it.
Graha Teal. And wow.
Teal?
Graha Tia is assigned to help as well, but he says, nah, I want to work on my sweet fighting moves
gains.
So I can fight my way up the Crystal Tower.
Gains. Yeah.
Yes, on his gains. But Rambrose says, no, you and your Alga knowledge, Graha Tia, are needed by Cid. And he makes the worst
pouting face. Yeah, it's like,
It is comically stretched how pouty his face gets.
Just goes full on.
And
like,
he's like, I'm not technically under your authority, Rambrose.
Straight up, like, you're not my real dad. He pulls that.
but he accepts.
He's like, fine.
Extremely grudgingly.
Yes. And then but he's like, but you, Warrior of Light, you train. You keep your body in peak physical condition.
So we adjourn to handle our respective tasks. And we cut over to the tower's exterior, where that mysterious masked man, the outlandish man, walks through the rubble of the guardian statues. He speaks to himself. One cannot help but be impressed. I'm beginning to understand the reliance you place on adventurers, old friend. Now he regards the tower. If his readings are correct, the energy source atop the tower is more than a match for the Ultima weapon. New toys for me to play with. And now he removes his mask.
Dun, dun, dun!
Revealing the face of Nero Tull Skava.
What?
Oh, shit.
No way.
He believed that the fates had conspired to deny him his just rewards once more, but it would seem they have a greater destiny in mind.
Yeah, so not a surprise. But, you know, we're like, oh, fuck, he's going to ruin this whole thing. We thought we were done with these motherfuckers, and here this guy just, like, shows up. Anyway, all right, so that's fun. All right, so now we're moving on. Time passes, and we have been strength training or whatever the fuck, and we check back in with Rambrose, and he's like, I'm disappointed to share with you that we have nothing to share with you. They're making new discoveries in the labyrinth. I think I said discoveries.
Yes.
They're making new discoveries in the labyrinth every day, but they haven't yet found a way to breach Circus Tower. Just then, two people walk up, total fucking strangers. They're dressed weird.
These are two heroes with red eyes. They are wearing strange ornate black armor, accented by green and white cloth. One is a man, Doga, with shortish black hair and a gold circlet, and the other, Une, is a purple-haired woman with a black and green metal headpiece that projects out from the left side of her head.
They look totally inappropriate for, like, anywhere in Eorzea that we've seen.
And much like ourselves, often.
Depending on what we're wearing.
Yes.
Right now, I think I'm totes props.
Totes props.
They introduce themselves as Une and Doga, and they are Alagon scholars, just like Graha. And they have also been sent by the students of Baldessian. Well, Graha, I don't think, was sent by the students.
He was, yes.
Oh, he was. Okay, great. So, well, that's a pretty easily debunked thing if that's not true, you guys.
So Rambrose says, hey, you guys, your names are very unusual. But more importantly, I've heard no word of other people being sent here by the students.
Yeah, the students didn't tell me shit. And also, considering what's going on with the Isle of Val, this would be, like, absolutely bottom of the list as far as priorities go. So all of this seems pretty fucking sketchy.
But Doga says, no, it's all cool. The letter got lost in the mail.
Yeah, like, you know what? I don't know what to say. Apparently the message didn't get to you somehow. But believe me when I say we're here to help.
Suddenly, though, Graha Tia clutches his head. There is an eerie ringing sound, but it soon subsides. People check in on him briefly, but he's like, I'm good. It was nothing. And Une, though, ignoring this outburst, notes that Graha's right eye is the same as theirs. Graha replies, the same? You have the Alagon eye as well? Its hue is said to be unique to Alagon's. Graha inherited his from his father, and his father from his father.
Yeah.
And only, so on.
Only a single child in a generation is born with the eye. And he's really trying to figure out, like, why do I have this? But this is great because you guys have it. So maybe we can figure this out. Yeah.
Doga replies that they don't have answers, save that those who possess it are bound to the fate of Alag.
Well, fuck.
So now that Graha realizes that they're eyebrows, he's like, yeah, welcome.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, they seem nice enough. But,
and Rambo says, okay, but I'm going to check in your story.
Yeah,
I'm going like, to source that.
Yeah, I'm going to contact the students and check. And you're not going to have any problems with me doing that, right? And they're like, go for it.
So with our new members, we adjourn to the tower entrance. We get a little Warrior of Light nod from Graha. With these new members and our uncanny knack for setting events in motion, we're sure to see some progress.
I love his optimism, man. He's always just like, it's just childlike glee. Love it.
When you're around, stuff happens.
Exactly. It's so weird how, like, that's the thing. So, yeah, and very early on in the game, too. I mean, it's not the first time they've called this out, but it's great.
You know, after A Realm Reborn ends, the main game, not the post game, they start getting self-referential.
Yeah, we get that first one from Thancred, where he's like, you're just going to give me that fucking nod again, aren't you?
Yep.
Okay.
So we find Biggs and Wedge surveying the tower base, and they welcome our new companions and escort us in to meet the chief. Cid is just inside the tower entrance, surveying an immense gold door with conduits of glowing blue energy running through it. And after everyone gets acquainted, we get to work.
Well, first, Cid is like, y'all are dressed weird. Has anybody told you that? Anyway, this door is impervious to everything.
He notes that their attire is distinctly elegant, which is correct. We can actually
Does he call it out as elegant? Just like, this is...
Nope. He says, just totally. I recognize your attire as elegant, and because of that, you probably know what's up with Alec.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, welcome.
Yeah, that's right. He's like, oh, maybe you do know.
So we can get a different colored version of this set ourselves. Same armor, different color scheme.
Is it red?
I think that like Doga's plate, we get that in like a brown and red. I was rocking that for a while on my main character before I transformed into a Lala. And then it got too scrunched to look cool.
Yeah. Rip. Okay. So whatever mechanism is holding these doors shut eludes Cid, which is saying a lot, right? Because it's Cid. The engravings on the door are of Allegan royalty. This is the assumption because it's a man with a crown and then a woman. And Une and Doga look at each other and they kind of do a little like, now, and approach the door. They put their hands out. There's an energy transfer and the doors just open.
Well, before that, Jen, Cid tells them to not bother to force the door. They've tried everything, but Une replies, they will save their strength. Why force the door when it will open of its own accord?
Suspish.
So Graha is once more mouth agape, dumbstruck this time.
What?
By this development.
Cid is also aghast. He's like, what the fuck? Okay, what are you?
But before they can reply, an unknown voice sounds out.
Well, a known voice.
What?
It's if we were to hear it, we would be like, we would know who it is, but it's...
Yes, but we
Yeah, it's question mark. Somebody from behind is reciting some shit.
Jen, excuse you very much. I have a poem to read.
Of course you do, yes.
Piercing the heavens and gathering light, a symbol of mankind's glory and might, its virtue guarded by gates impregnable, only to those of royal blood and swearable.
Victory. And swearable. Yeah, straight up. I hate it. I hate it. This is Nero reciting an unfortunate Allegan legend.
I'm sure it sounded better before they translated it.
100%. And swearable. So yeah, Nero, you know, sauntering up in the way he does. And everybody's like, what are you up to, man? And he's like, okay, look, I get it, but my legion, the 14th, defunct. My association with it is a death sentence if I were to return to Garlemald. So I've been roaming Eorzea as like an independent contractor of sorts, just trying to, you know, find my new purpose, my new looking for shit to do. And Cid's new tower project seemed like a worthy endeavor, you know, like whatever. And you know, I'm going to join your group. I'm going to be a part of Noah. And Cid's like, no, you're fucking not. Do you not recall everything we just went through? Like, you are the bad guy.
But no, he will make amends, Jen, starting by spilling the beans on Une and Doga. He's going to rat them out. He says that the Crystal Tower, a symbol of Alec's might and prosperity, could only be entered by those of royal blood and very few others. According to Nero's research, only royal blood can open this gate. So Graha asks then, are these two near strangers Allegan royalty? Nothing so glamorous, says Nero. They are imitations of royalty. Clones. Now that they've been busted, Doga speaks up. The time for concealment is past. He says that they did not mean to deceive. they just didn't want to march on in here and spill this elaborate story, which was sure to draw skepticism.
Yeah, like, hey, we're elegant royalty. We could totally get in there and be like, you're full of shit. Get out of here, you crazy fucking people.
So Une suggests that we adjourn to the Eight Sentinels where we can talk in more depth. And as we're leaving with Nero, Cid calls him out. Do you really just mean to follow us around?
Are you really just going to follow us around? Absolutely, he is going to. But you know what? Like, yes, but you know what? I have gifts for you. Here is an Allegan tombstone. This was previously very selfishly guarded by the 14th. I'm giving it to you. This is how I found out about the clones, how I was able to call out the shit and how I knew the poem and blah, blah, blah. And now it's yours. Are we cool yet?
So, Jen, before going on, I do want to pause for us to talk about this Nero deal. I do love Nero, of course, but I feel like his entry here stretches the bounds of plausibility. The elephant in the room, first off, is that he should probably be arrested as an enemy of the Eorzean Alliance at a minimum.
Right? The
if
audacity.
Not as a actual war criminal.
My God.
But nobody in our group has any political obligations to the Alliance. We have no political posts there. Maybe ethical, sure, but not bound by duty, per se.
I mean, we do know a little bit more about, like, Cid and Nero's past, and so we have a little bit more insight as to, like, the nuance of their relationship, but straight up, he was the architect of this entire last hoorah by yes. the 14th, so...
I could see Cid being like, hey, Nero, for old time's sake, get the fuck out of here, and we'll give you, like, 2 hours head start or whatever.
Yeah.
Before we call
sick rub
someone,
on you.
Right?
Yeah.
But the fact that he gets to make his coy entrance and drops a couple of lore bombs and then that's everything is forgiven is not nearly enough, I think.
No. Further, so I remember like playing this first time. I'm like, why are we just letting him hang out?
Right?
This is crazy.
Exactly. He is the mind behind restoring and unleashing the Ultima weapon. And now he gets to hang out with us as we go into this even greater, supposedly, treasure trove of Allegan artifacts.
I was so mad that everybody else wasn't also mad.
Yes.
Like, you know, like, we're calling the cops, like, right now, like, tackle him, put zip ties on his wrists, like, whatever. Like, this is dumb. Absolutely not. You're not going to be, like, traipsing around this thing. Like, you are the reason why we're doing this so we can shut it down,
right?
Man.
And if you talk to Cid between quest steps, he says that Nero can't be trusted and he'll do his best to keep an eye on him at all times. He does not, spoiler.
Correct.
If you talk to Nero, though, he says, we may not have gotten off to the best of starts.
No.
But the past is in the past. Yesterday's enemies can be today's friends. Do you not agree, Warrior of Light?
Wow, that is so manipulative.
So regardless of all that protestation, which I think is absolutely fair, and this is an absurd story point, he's in the group now. And again, I love this character. His reintroduction could use some work, but either way, he's here now and it's for the best in the long run.
100%. I'm so happy he's there. But in the beginning, I could not believe my eyes.
That's my Nero gripe. He's here, putting that beef to bed.
He's here.
So we now return to the Eight Sentinels, and Une and Doga give us their whole story. They are not students of Baldessian. Surprise. They are indeed Allegan clones, as Nero revealed. But to explain the present, they must delve into the past. Une recounts the decline of Aleg, the period of indolence before Aemon resolved to resurrect Emperor Zandi and revitalize the Empire. As part of Aemon's experiments with life and immortality, he created clones of the Emperor's descendants. So this pair are a copy of the Emperor's actual descendants, also named Une and Doga. Rambrose says that when the sons study the Empire, they assume that the second reign of Emperor Zandi they found in the records was a namesake, but no, this was the same person as the first Emperor Zandi, just reborn.
Bizarre.
Une says that the original Emperor was reborn, he restored the Empire to glory, but he did not stop there. He resolved to have his Empire dominate the entire world. To fuel this pursuit, he had the Crystal Tower converted. Formerly, it was an immense power source. But now it was changed into a restricted research facility into the powers of darkness, the void. At this point, we see Nero, who is slouching at the outskirts of the group. He gives a huge, hungry grin at this point in the story.
What's in on that research facility?
Yeah, he does. Cid, meanwhile, exclaims, "What's the deal with rulers turning to darkness for power?"
Because it's powerful.
At least, he says, this guy is long dead, so we don't have to worry about this particular megalomaniac.
One second there, Chief. Oh, no, he's actually up there. He lives up there now. He's alive. He's chilling. He's literally sitting at the top of this tower right now as we speak.
His ambition burning as bright as ever.
It's a bad scene.
The story continues. Wielding the power of darkness required more energy than yielded by the tower's solar collection, and so the artificial moon Delamude was created, Bahamut imprisoned inside, and it was launched into space. There it focused the sun's energy and channeled that into the tower, and as we know from our prior delve into Allegan history, a miscalculation on the Allegan's part resulted in a massive energy surge, triggering a cataclysmic earthquake that swallowed the tower and ravaged the entire Allegan Empire, the Calamity of Earth. As the tower fell, though, Aemon intervened. Using powerful magics, he halted the flow of time within the tower. Everyone within was placed into a kind of stasis, preserved for millennia until the tower was once again freed by the Seventh Calamity. That means that the tower's denizens have been conscious and active since the Calamity about 5 years. Even though the Empire has faded, Zandi's lust for power is strong as ever, and now he has consorted with the Void and all that entails. This danger is why the clones have approached us. They are carrying on the cause of their originals, putting an end to Zandi's madness. The clones were in the tower when it reactivated, but they set out on their own, looking for allies. And that search is now over. They found us, the Warrior of Light. No ordinary person could fight through the labyrinth of the ancients and live.
We did, though. Yay!
Cid looks to us. What do you think? Are you going to save the world again? And we give him our classic Warrior of Light hand and fist.
Yeah!
Punch hand.
Yeah! So this is when Rambrose declares Noah's new objective is to seal off the tower forever. Keep its dark secrets from seeing the light of day, you know, that whole thing. Allegan tech is too dangerous for anybody to wield, just period.
Besides Jin, no amount of relics can compare to our two new genuine Allegan friends.
Said no archaeologist ever. Though, you know, if they had like an Encino man, like, you know, chugging beers next to them at a bar, they'd be like, you know what? Yeah, sure, I'll talk to this guy instead of digging up stuff in the Badlands or whatever. Which is like literally Jurassic Park. It's the plot. I think we're out of a job. So it is time.
We are now charged with entering Circus Tower and eliminating all hostile elements within.
Including Zandi.
Including
Zandi.
Emperor Zandi. After the group starts to disperse, Graha approaches Une and Doga. He asks, his right eye is like theirs. Does this mean... Yes, they say. Know that clones are unable to bear offspring, implying that original Allegan blood is in Graha's ancestry.
Yeah. My read on it was that he was afraid that he was like a clone somehow. Yeah,
likewise.
Yeah. So he was like, does that mean I'm a clone? So they say like, no.
Or a descendant of a clone. I think that.
Right. Yeah. So that clones cannot reproduce. This is true. Like in real life. So they're like, no. Your shit is legit. Like, we're clones. You got it from your dad. Yeah, you're fine for now.
So now we get one more break between scenes. If we talk to Une and Doga now, they tell us that we will find more clones of them inside the tower. But these are husks bereft of independent will. Their sole purpose is to eliminate intruders. Do not stay our hand in slaying them. Une explains that the original Une and Doga placed the welfare of the people above all else. They initially supported Emperor Zandi's reascension to the throne, but turned on him when it became evident that he was consorting with dark powers.
Checks out.
We check in on Graha next. He says that these revelations have rattled him a little bit, but now is the time for action. We have to get to Emperor slaying. May the crystal grant us strength. And now, Circus Tower is unlocked. This tower interior is gorgeous. This is a continuous stairway in this radiant blue crystal interior trimmed with gold. However, Jen, this place is very inefficient as anything but a way up to the top. It doesn't feel like there's anything in here that would justify the scale of the place. There's no machinery, it doesn't feel like a place that people work in, research the void in, whatever. It's just a series of landings, which are battle arenas, until the next staircase.
Yep. Yeah, where are people hanging out?
Anyway.
Maybe this is just like the stairwell that we're in, and we're not in like the living quarters or the research facility or whatever.
I feel like we see the entire thing from bottom to top in our ascent.
Well, fuck, that's a huge, huge problem.
This is not the only dungeon that is more style than substance. But that said, though, a lot of the A Realm Reborn dungeons do actually have a sense of place. Places like, even though you might hate it, Zamael Darkhold, for instance, Stone Vigil, even Sestasha, for instance, they have facilities that support the denizens. A lot of Alliance raids are like this, where it's kind of a bunch of spectacle before you hit the next boss fight.
Yeah, the spaces are huge, but there's nothing going on.
Yeah. So it does make it feel, I guess, a bit surreal and very much like a classic Final Fantasy dungeon versus a place that exists in a quote real world.
Don't think about it. It's fine. But, you know, if you do look at the tower from the outside, there are some like independent like spires kind of coming off the sides. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Anyway, that's all. It's good. I love the interior. It looks fantastic. Just saying that this is more style than substance in terms of the visual storytelling.
Yep. Yeah, we're just fighting on landings the whole time.
Thank you to all the players that joined us for our minimum item level run of Circus Tower.
Woo!
Great turnout. Great time as always. This was much easier than Labyrinth of the Ancients. Like, immensely easier. I was prepared for a slog and some prog, but we aced every single fight here. Even the ones with brand new mechanics on min eye level compared to normal synced.
Yeah, fucking nailed it.
Also of note here is that unlike in Labyrinth of the Ancients, where it felt like it was designed for 6 tanks, this one felt like 3 tanks was the meta. There's not a reason to have more tanks. There's no kind of hardship felt.
Yeah.
Unlike in Labyrinth.
The very first fight, we're like, good God, how do you deal with this?
Yeah.
We really had to like cobble together some kind of strategy that, like, this was not meant to be the way you deal with this, but we dealt with it.
Yep.
Thank you so much for the absolute badasses that joined us on this run. I'm gonna go by roll. How about that? Tanks first.
Wow.
Yeah.
Way to play into the fucking goddamn right. Put those tanks on a pedestal,
and this
Jen.
Is, this is somebody who plays DPS. Just that's it. That's all I am. I'm a DPS. Okay. All right. Our tanks. Raven Ghostpaw, Renibianos Tha, Tofu Totofu, and our healers were Shushuket,
thank you,
Levi, Auricula Meretricula, that's a cool name, Rina Chellaway, Calidus Caddis, Kiko Fei, and Pontau Jessel, and then our, you know, the filthy masses.
Are you going to do it by ranged magic and melee DPS, Jen?
Nope, I'm going to call it there. Our DPSs were Golden Abbey, Quasar Red, Beryl Proud Sage, Naughty Ivy, Athena Kylo.
You skipped yourself.
I skipped myself.
Otis Oldthing.
Lauren Seahack, Aki Maho, Nefla Highwind, Vestal Gorgonoth, Aroki Fanan, Freya Highwind, no relation, Auril Sotheril, Chi Miu, and Ash Rosenpyre.
I love we've gotten those guys twice in the same group.
the Nephila and the Freya Highwinds, yeah. Again, no relation. But yeah, we fucking killed it. There were new mechanics. There were things to do, absolutely. But we did it.
We done it.
We handled it.
I don't know what it is, but they seem to have really kind of eased off on the difficulty between these, because obviously there's been updates to the balance of the meta since A Realm Reborn, so we can never truly re-experience the release conditions. Sure. But also, we were hammered in Labyrinth. I'm in eye level, and we're now in Circus Tower on min eye level, so still the bare minimum item, you know, the gear level to do the instance, according to the devs. But this was so much easier.
So much.
Except for Zondi himself, the whole tank buster auto attack was almost a non-issue. I had a much better time healing this time because I was not having to baby our actual tank's health constantly, watching for that 1-2 near-death punch.
Right.
I could actually do DPS, finally.
Hey!
So, until Zondi, who does the fucking tank buster auto like the OG
classic
bosses do.
Yeah.
Beyond that, though, just the damage itself was toned down. The mechanics felt far less frantic. There was a lot less kind of skin of your teeth type five mechanics who are threatening us at once.
Yeah.
They must have, I guess, I'm assuming they thought that they might have gone too hard on the first one and eased back on the challenge a little bit. That's my inference based purely on how much easier this felt for us. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know, but.
Yeah. And so did between Labyrinth of the Ancients and Circus Tower, did they go from six tank meta to three tank meta?
I don't know when that change happened, but I'm almost positive it was after A Realm Reborn.
Yeah. Just for some reason, this was readable. This was doable.
Yeah. And it might be that they learned from the first one too and realized that, hey, maybe have more telegraph mechanics, fewer hard to read invisible triggers.
Yeah.
Whatever.
They're not all up in their own shit.
Yeah.
Making weird.
Well, it was their first one, so yeah.
No. Yeah, there's always like charm and funk and jazz that's going on in there, but it's like, as a player, it's really hard.
Sometimes they're gimmicky, but honestly, I do love the A Realm Reborn mechanics because they're so creative, even though some of them don't really work. It's just still fun to experience these, and the new ones, though, they're much more clean,
formulaic.
Which is both good and bad.
Yeah.
Anyway, enough talking around it. Let's get to it. So we climb those stairs, Jin, and we get to our first landing. We have an ads fight first. Nice warm-up. Here we have a few ads. There's a dragon here. We get to fight like actual shinobi, so ninjas as well.
Yeah, that's right.
Which is interesting. They have ninja minions in this place.
Right.
So maybe Alec had ninjas, evidently. I mean, they did, obviously, because they're here. But also, Jin, you know that in Final Fantasy III, an enemy type in the in-game areas is actually ninjas. So
all right.
They're obviously, once again, they pull very heavily from Final Fantasy III in their Crystal Tower design. So I'm assuming they're like, yeah, we got ninjas there, we get ninjas here. But that also means in our game world, though, that yes, the Elegans did have some sort of ninja type art.
Were they also in control of Doma and, you know, the Far East?
This was millennia ago, so I wouldn't apply our modern geography to that. Literal millennia, cultures have seen massive upheaval since then. Yes, they did control that area. So I guess you could make it a case that, sure.
Yeah, but it wasn't like a homogenized culture. It was just
sure,
like,
yes.
You know.
So you're correct, Jin, that the ninja arts could very well have carried forward in Doma into modern Doma.
It seems like maybe a little bit of both. Probably mostly because in Final Fantasy III, this is how it was structured.
Well, also, all it takes is like one jobstone, right? From a ninja, just like for Summoner, for instance. So just say like some guy finds a ninja jobstone tilling the fields or whatever, then bam, you got the ninja arts revived. Just like we found the Summoner jobstone from St. Koinak's find, resurrecting this art after even more time had passed. So it's a very good case, honestly, Jin, that you made that, hey, the ninja tradition in Doma could have come from some remnant of the Elegant Empire that occupied that space in their era. Good connection, Jin. That's why you make the big bucks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, cool. Yeah, I had not thought about that, but that's a very good point, Jin.
All right.
Anyway, so we kill these Elegant Shinobi and Kunoichi, and also, again, the dragon, other ads here. We kill them. Easy. We move on.
Yeah.
And we trek on up those stairs and we get to Scylla. So this is our first actual boss. Scylla is a woman with her head replaced by several snapping hounds. Back in the time of Alig, Scylla was an archmage and a political rival of Aemon's. During Aemon's experimentation leading up to Zandi's revival, he persuaded her to undergo a transformation, promising her a taste of the eternal life he was developing. However, this was a ruse. When Scylla awoke from the procedure, she found that Aemon had grafted several wild hounds to her, a creature that she completely despised. And when we kill her here, she's grateful. She says, "Finally, the hounds grow silent."
Wow. Wow, that's fucked.
It is fucked up.
That's like kind of bloodborne-y.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody knows, really.
Well, this place is full of revenge porn for Aemon. Aemon loves to fuck up his enemies in fucked up
fashions.
Yeah,
you will serve Aleg for the rest of eternity.
Yeah.
What a fuck.
So we fight Scylla, though, before we give her her rest, finally. This fight has a lot of little mechanics. She will spawn staves that blast a donut AoE around them. She also spawns elemental balls that will tether to random players. First off, there are the lightning balls. These must be brought into three lightning pillars on the arena's outskirts. If they're not brought to a pillar, they explode for raid-wide damage. What you've got to do on min eye level is you must bring at least three balls to each of the three pillars. This will cause a wipe if you do not do this. More on that later. When you bring a lightning ball to a pillar, it will gain a ring, an energy ring around it. So you want there to be three energy rings around each pillar before her wipe mechanic.
I had no idea.
Until now. There are also the ice balls. These will freeze their target after a set amount of time. You cannot prevent this. It just happens. When the frozen people thaw, they will leave a puddle on the ground. If an ice ball is brought into the puddle, it freezes everyone in the puddle. Also, the puddles, though, they grant a heavy fire resistance buff that's needed to survive a future mechanic. Finally, there's the fireballs. The fireballs should be brought onto the ice people so they can be thawed. Her first heavy raid-wide mechanic is Ancient Flare, which you have to be inside the melted water puddles to absorb. That fire resistance up buff will help you soak the Ancient Flare from Scylla, keeping you from wiping, otherwise you're going to die. But the major mechanic, though, is the phase change when she casts Daybreak. So Daybreak never ever happens in any normal run. This is only going to be seen on a synced run unless there's something going seriously wrong with your normal run. This happens very late in the fight. Daybreak is what checks those lightning pillars being charged up. If you have not charged them, or if you mess the mechanic up, you will all be petrified and you will wipe. If they are charged up, you need to stand on these platforms just like for the Phlegethon flare mechanic, and if you do so, it'll raise a barrier that will block the Daybreak and keep you from being petrified.
Ta-da!
So yeah, charge those pillars, step on the platforms, block that Daybreak, you should be good to go. Otherwise, it'll be a wipe. That's it, mainly. It's really about surviving the Ancient Flare with the puddles and then bringing those lightning balls into the pillars correctly. We do that. Fight's over. Scylla freed. Moving on. We head up now to another landing. This is more just regular trash enemies. We got three armored guys and several little Void Scent guys. During this fight, a dragon will dive bomb onto the arena and then land, adding like a mini boss to the fight. Also, at this point in time, there will be several Doga and Une clones that spawn. We got to fight them too. Easy enough. We press on upstairs to Glacia Labolas. Labolas, I don't know.
I don't remember this guy at all, for some reason. You just smoke him every other time?
Who's
this guy?
He is easily smokable on normal fights, yes. But there is a whack-ass mechanic here that you would never know about on normal. So, first off, Glacia is a heavily armored green-skinned warrior with a horned helm. He was a willing and knowing volunteer for Aemon's experiments. Rare exception.
Huh.
He was the commander of the Imperial Honor Guard and a completely loyal subject to the Emperor. And one that was dedicated to stamping out the rebellions that plagued the Empire before Zandi's second coming. Aemon's experiments successfully prolonged Glacia's life and further warped his already hateful mind. So on now to the fight. During this fight, Glacia will summon adds. The first ones are little clockwork whites. These are just like the Magitek bits that we fight beforehand, little flying drone guys. These will beam energy to Glacia. A player must stand in their tether, in their beam to block it and allow other players to kill them. You will be stunned while you're blocking the beam. So just be warned.
Interesting.
Even on min eye level, this was not a high enough damage fight to need two healers. So I volunteered to be a stunny person. My co-healer was fine to cover the tank. No big deal. So stood in that beam, got stunned. DPS killed the bits. Easy. After a while, he will spawn Clockwork Squires. This is the first thing that you probably won't see on normal. The Clockwork Squires, these are like little robot men. They will spawn alongside six energy nodes that will tether to Glacia. While Glacia is tethered, he will reflect damage back to attackers. So you need to bait the Clockwork Squires into these tethers to be able to weaken them and to block the beams from Glacia. After a fixed time, we hit phase two. This is the phase change. There are a ton of little platforms outside the main crystal platform of the arena. These are never relevant in the normal fight. But there are several, maybe 10 or so, roughly, platforms with directional jump pads on them all around the outsides of the main platform. The jump pads are inactive most of the time, but right when the phase change happens, they will activate. And there will be three jump pads from the main platform that will then point out to various outer platforms. Each alliance must use a jump pad together to jump out to the outer platforms because Glacia will do a raid-wide persistent AoE on the main platform that will kill anyone inside of it. And he maintains this AoE until the phase change is over. So you gotta jump onto the outer platforms. And once you're there, there'll be ads on every single outer platform. You must, with the other alliances, jump between all the outer platforms using the jump pads and kill all the adds. Only once every outer add is killed can you come back to the main platform and resume the fight with Glacia.
Yep, totally weird. No idea. And like, I think this fight is where we had like a bunch of dead bodies for some reason.
Yeah, that's because several people, myself included, missed the jump before he dropped his raid wide.
Oh, okay. Because, yeah, when we were on the outer platforms, there were just, like, dead people on the outer platforms. I'm like, why are you guys dead out here? Because they got rezzed out there or something. Or
no,
whatever.
Because...
Or did the game just, like, put their bodies there?
No, the jump pads jumped their bodies out there.
That's so fucked up. But, yeah, I'd, like, hop onto a new platform. I'm like, what's up, dead people? Next platform. What's up, dead people? It was fun.
So once you do the jump pad mechanic and kill all the outer adds, you can then hop back to the main platform and finish the fight. No new mechanics. Easy. One more adds fight after that. Just three armored guys and then a red dragon flies around and spits fireballs at you while you fight them. Dragon lands, kill the dragon. No big deal. Now, though, we're on to Aemon. Aemon himself. This guy, I feel like, doesn't get near enough story introduction for how major a character he is.
Seriously.
He seems like just one more unknown, weird-named guy in the tower when he's actually a major, major character.
Major.
And, like, instrumental in Elleg's history. Because, again, he's the reason why the Crystal Tower is here and full of people now. He's the one who revived Zandi. He's the one who has... made everyone a freak of nature in this
tower.
Yeah,
his legacy echoes throughout the entire game.
His boss fight is such a minor fanfare.
Kind of, yeah. You know, it does speak to what he did. You know, you feel like you're on stage. There's like stage lighting and stage noises and stuff like that. And he looks crazy.
Yeah.
He's got an outfit.
Yes, he looks like he's a star of the show, and he is, kind of. He's got his rockin' fucking hat, and this is an A-tier hat for people who can wear it. My only gripe about the hat, when you equip it yourself, is that bows clip through it hardcore. It's real annoying.
And isn't it only equipable by bards?
Yes.
Archers and bards.
I believe so, yes.
Correct.
But
that's why
bows
it took me 2 years
clipping
to get
through
it.
That shit. At least on my Lala main.
They poke through everything.
I know, it's pretty bad.
Black mage staffs, They bards poke through all of
fucking
your hats.
Giant hats. It's a requirement for the job, and bows love clipping through that shit. It drives me crazy.
No, that's the same thing with Black Mage. Yeah. You have these awesome wide brim hats. Everything you equip will stick right through it.
Yeah. Suck.
Maybe someday. But it would look weird if like your hat brim like bent because of your staff.
Well, you can turn off your weapon when sheathed, as you can make it so it's invisible while sheathed.
That's great. Because I'm like, well, I still want to see it.
I think it's in cool. character options or something.
All right.
But I mean, you Perfect. Could whip it out and have it in front of you. And that, for Black Mage at least, reduces the clipping issue. For Bard, though, even the attack animations clip that hat.
Yep. Oh, well.
Tragedy.
Yeah.
First one flaw problems. In Aemon's hat. One grave miscalculation.
It's the only thing.
But anyway, yeah. So this guy, this fight, no special cutscene. You just see this guy here. And having learned who Aemon actually is, because fuck if I knew the first playthrough what this guy was about.
No, nothing.
It feels like this shouldn't be the real Aemon, like a clone or something, just because of how little he does. There's no cutscene, no.
There should be some speech. Some dialogue, a little like anything. But, yeah. You know, he's just standing there and then the fight starts. That's
it. Exactly.
And then the fight ends and we run away. Like, there's nothing going on.
But to be fair, Zandi gets like one line of dialogue, so he's not much better
than
Aemon.
That's what I was going to say. And like, I mean, they barely give Zandi a little something.
Yeah, it's my mantra for A Realm Reborn, where the game undersells its own story. These people are huge figures in history, and they have, like you said, Jen, ripples throughout time to our current era. But the game just drops them in there with so little fanfare, so little anything, really. No screen time whatsoever besides being a quick boss fight, and then they're gone. And it's like, how did this major showdown get brushed over so quickly?
I know. Like a cutscene with like a, I mean, I know this is a big ask, but a voice acted something just to drive home how significant these people were and are.
Yeah.
It is
anyway,
what it is.
It's a Realm Reborn.
Yeah. Also, I hate his cape. You know what, does anybody else hate his cape?
The boxy kind of texture to it?
Yeah, it looks like the little like plastic thing, storage organizer, whatever, that you hang on the back of a closet door that holds all of your shoes. That's what it looks like. Or it's like a down
Jen.
Comforter that's like baffled.
It's where
you know?
He keeps all of his ads in the storage cape.
All of his ads?
Yeah.
Oh, ads.
I cracked it. I saw the case.
But it's like flat. It's like a quilt. Yeah, like no, it's a storage thing that holds shoes. It
holds snakes.
It is
kumkums.
No. It's like Sweet and Low packets before you pull them apart into their individual packets.
Sweet and Low Aemon.
You know, I hope somebody, at least one person out there in the world, understands that I'm trying to communicate here. It is so distracting. I hate escape. I don't understand it. From a fashion perspective.
Okay, so we fight Aemon. And ironically, despite it being on a stage, there is no real introduction to the fight. That said, though, the fight does feel very theatrical. And I mean that literally, because of how during the mechanics, we hear the spotlight turn on and
it's,
off.
It's like there's set like design.
This, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's the lighting is very, yeah, it's like there's somebody turning on the giant pars up ahead. Going,
yes.
Yep. The spotlight shit. And also it's like a red carpet with some gold design in it. It's very much like an opera house kind
yes.
of a vibe.
I like it. It's a cool effect. It's a nice shakeup from the blue crystal platforms, which I love too, but having some variety is nice.
Also, it's Aemon, so, you know, it should be somewhat distinctive because we get literally nothing else.
Yep. Burn. So in this fight, Aemon has a handful of spells. He's got Blazaga Forte, Thundaga Forte, and Faraga Forte. In order, Blazaga is a point-blank AoE with a heavy effect. Thundaga is a multi-target AoE with a dot to it, and then Faraga Forte is just a raid-wide. Aemon also has adds. That is the main mechanic in the fight. The first ones are the experiments. These are piles of sludge that I'm assuming are the early test subjects of his that got melted down into like flesh composites. I'm hoping that they're not sentient in the state.
Yep.
But he summons the experiments, and they will sludge towards Aemon. And you want your off-tanks and melee DPS to stun these guys and kill them ASAP, because if they reach Aemon, they will do a raid-wide debuff like silence. real bad time.
Yikes.
Kill those ads. He also spawns tall figures called Kumkums. These are kind of spooky looking tall guys. They're pretty beefy, but they can be weakened if a player baits an electrical orb into them. Speaking of, Aemon conjures lightning balls. These will hit their target player that they're tethered to and make them mini, make them little tiny guys.
Yeah, that's what they do to the Kumkums.
Yes, so you bait the lightning balls into the Kumkums, it makes them mini, and they're much easier to kill than otherwise. The final adds mechanic are the toads and snakes. So first off, Aemon will freeze people on occasion, just like with Scylla. But at the same time, though, players will be transformed into flame toads. The flame toads can't do much besides breathe fire, but this fire will melt the frozen players. Great. What's not great, though, is that he will summon in snakes as well during the same mechanic. These snakes love eating those frogs. So they will focus fire on the frogged players and do tons of damage to them.
Damn.
So you need the other players to burn those snakes ASAP to save those poor frogs.
It's rough.
Rough times. Finally, Aemon will sometimes hit players with a bomb debuff. Just like a little debuff icon that looks like a bomb. If the debuff ticks off, it will explode and it will do heavy damage and knockback. It's real annoying. But you can Asuna this debuff. That's it, except for Curtain Call. This is a raid-wide that will kill any player caught in it, unless they hide behind players who have been frozen inside ice blocks. Just like the Behemoth Meteor mechanic, ice block those players, hide behind them, line of sight that Curtain Call, you're good to go.
Mm-hmm.
If you do that, you're golden, aim and killed.
Boom.
Moving on to the very top of the tower. We reach a circular platform of crystal. This is a very cool arena. The very tower top here, we have
it's giant. It's open to the sky. Yeah. And
a giant throne in the background made of crystal with the Emperor Zondi himself sitting atop it.
He's a big guy.
He's a big guy. He is jacked AF. He's got dark skin, blank gold-tinged eyes, gold hair, and his flesh is inlaid with silver bands. And he's got no shirt. He's showing off the muscles.
He ain't got no shirt. Sun's out, guns out.
Sun's out, guns out. And the sun is out during the fight.
It is.
But he's wearing pants in a tasteful orange that complements his colors.
Very nice. Thank you for wearing pants.
Thank you. He also has a gold crown of sorts. It's like a black and gold semicircle of material that kind of floats behind his head.
Like a halo?
It's like a half halo almost, but it looks like it's made of some sort of black cloth.
So, okay, I see his big old thing of hair. His poofy hair. Oh, are you talking about this thing?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's like, it looks like the top of a, like a giant collar. Like at the top of a cape, you know, like a vampire, like a Dracula cape,
yes.
You know? But it looks like it's made out of, like, bone and flesh.
Interesting.
Could also be,
A different read, but
there. It depends on the artwork that you're looking at. There's, of course, I'm on the internet, so there's a lot of...
Oh, are you looking at, like, fan art?
No, I'm looking at screen grabs. The one in particular was like this is definitely like somebody's rendering of it, where it looked a lot more like the collar of his cape as opposed to, yeah, like what the fuck are these things?
It's weird. It's like it's floating behind his head.
Yeah.
It feels like it's his crown.
I think it might be part of his, at least like I think it's like something that kind of wraps around like his neck. And shoulders, and it's part of that decorative structure.
Anyway, he's got that. So we see him lounging on his throne. And as we approach, he tells us that we fight valiantly, but to no avail. And he stands up and teleports onto the actual battlefield, the circular platform that is the battle arena, and says that soon the forces of darkness will be upon us. And that's that. That's the intro.
Oh, yeah?
We have the Zondi fight. Just like in Labyrinth, the last boss fight is a lot easier than the predecessors, it feels like.
Yeah, I think in normal ADR, we see pretty much all these mechanics, so it was very familiar
to us. Yes, no surprises in the Zondi fight for us. The only thing, though, is that in ADR, when the stack markers come out, Each alliance gets a stack marker. People love to mash those together.
Right, yeah. Like, we'll just take care of it in one big swoop.
But that will kill you if you overlap them on min eye level.
If you're syncing, yeah, don't do that.
Yes.
Go to your alliance.
Otherwise, just the same as normal synced. So first off, during the fight, we got orbs, of course.
We got orbs.
He will summon golden orbs across the battlefield. You must stand inside these, one player to soak each orb, or they will go off doing raid-wide damage. It's just like a tower mechanic.
Yep.
About a third of the way through the fight, Zonde retreats to his throne and calls down meteors. These are being summoned by little geometric magic things called attractors. So you gotta kill the attractors before the meteor hits. There will be a few small ones on the outside and then one big one on the inside. Kill the outer ones first, kill the inner ones second. Good to go. I see more near misses on this thing in ADR than I did in our fight, despite the item level sync. Like sometimes one will be ignored entirely and then it almost hits before someone like runs over there and burns it down.
Yeah, you're like running around like, guys, hello.
So we destroy the attractors. This gets repeated once more later on with more attractors to kill. Same mechanic, just more things to burn down. After the attractors are resolved, we get that stack mechanic. Each alliance gets one stack marker. You want to spread these guys out and then drop them near Zondi. And then they will leave these anti-gravity fields on the ground where they hit. You want to be on these. They will make you float. It's important because soon Zondi will cast Ancient Quagga, which will kill anyone who is not floating. And that's it, pretty much. I mean,
yes,
it's that
yeah, no,
twice
just,
over.
It
and
just
then,
repeats and repeats and repeats forever.
And then it's done. It's a very cursory fight after this dungeon.
Correct.
Like, maybe a bit too easy, frankly.
I think so. Yeah. All of the mechanics, there's nothing really cool or different. I mean, you know what? We're saying this as somebody, as people who have played this, who have done this raid for, you know, dozens of times. So it all seems very like academic to us at this point.
Yes, but also Zondi has three mechanics, literally.
No. Yeah, it's just, it's you do the things and then just, it just goes, there's not really any major like phase change. There's no big,
like,
you
swap
know,
him and Scylla or something and right? give him Scylla's
yeah,
mechanics.
Scylla's was some shit.
I mean, Zondi even has like a scepter. Like Scylla does, so like
he's even got a set.
I don't know. I mean, it just it feels
I mean,
weird
the
to
only,
make this.
Like, okay, we've got tower soaks. Who cares?
This
Easy.
Is the Void Touch Emperor of this ancient world-spanning empire.
He doesn't even use like void powers in this fight.
I don't know. The
maybe they're saving that because it's
purple.
Like you know the what?
The stacks are kind of purple. The float mechanic's a little bit purple.
All right.
I don't know. Whatever. Yeah. Anyway, you're right, Jen. Of course that. The mechanics do not speak to his person and his role.
No, he needs a La Habrea rework, I think.
Yeah.
A Rattatan rework.
All right, we're going to have a solo fight after we clear the circus tower.
Not a solo fight, but you know what I mean.
I know, yes.
Okay.
But I agree. I think that they've done Crystal Tower dirty in general, just the way that they've let the sync lie for so long with them syncing to 120, despite that making all the mechanics so easy. Anyway, that's what it is. But we do it. We defeat Zondi, and we think the day is won. But a strange-looking black-purple tear hangs in space.
Yeah, that's disconcerting. Yeah, like everybody runs up like, hey, you did it.
Nero whips out his little wristometer, the GPS-like device.
But Nero is now all like armored up. He has his full kit on,
yes.
Except for his helmet. But yep. Yeah, he's and Sid looks at him. He's going like, what? What are you wearing now? What is up? And he's like, bro, we're in dangerous surrounds, okay? You cannot possibly fault me for trying to exhibit a little bit of caution. So yeah, he's got his little reader out and he's wandering around looking at it. Mind your business.
Meanwhile, Une, Doga, and Graha discuss how to shut down the tower permanently, but Graha sees the purple rift and asks what it is. Une responds that Emperor Zondi sought to obtain power from the void. The world of darkness. He opened a gate for the void sent to enter our world, our ether in exchange for their service. And that covenant is still in effect. But since Une and Doga are of the Emperor's bloodline, they should be able to annul a pact. By Zande's blood it was sealed, by their blood it shall be undone. But now, at this point, Nero drops all pretense of being a team player.
Right. Though, you know, while Une and Doga are talking about, like, the pact and whatever the fuck, in the background, Nero is just, like, wandering around aimlessly. And there's, like, a lot of this, like, in the moment, like, before we enter the tower, when Une and Doga are like, let's go back out to the Sentinels and have a conversation. They're talking to us. And everybody goes back to camp, I guess, or they're leaving the area. And Nero is walking away, and you can see that you're having your own conversation. This is, like, way in the background. So you can see Nero, like, walking, following everybody as they leave. Cid goes up behind him and says something, probably to the effect of, like, where do you think you're going? Nero doesn't even turn around. He puts his hands up in exasperation, like, bro, I'm going to do what I'm going to do, okay? Just leave me alone. Ugh. And then he walks on. Cid has a moment of like, this fucking guy, god damn it. Like, you just see this adorable little exchange in the background, again, because of Nero. And then now, as Une and Doga are talking, Nero, in all of his armor, with his little meter reader, or whatever it is he's got, just wandering around, like, looking up, trying to, he's holding up his hands, like a lost tourist. It's hilarious.
But
it's,
now,
it's just,
though,
it's comedy. But
he begins to shout. I don't know what his plan was.
He starts laughing maniacally, is what he does.
The thing is here, though, what is his end game? He drops his mask, his pretense of being a team player, without any sort of exit strategy.
He doesn't care.
He should, because until shit goes down in a second, he's outnumbered. He's got us, the Warrior of Light, like, right there. What's he going to do? He doesn't have control over the shit yet. He just finds it. But he's like, my plan's revealed. I'm going to harness his power somehow, and I'm going to not be stopped by the five people here who are opposed to me. I don't know what his game plan was before shit goes crazy.
You know, this might be an example of Nero actually exhibiting not a lot of forethought, because he is operating 100% as this tunnel vision, like, completely internally driven narcissist who's just, he's so singularly minded in this particular instance that maybe he just didn't even think about it. He's just that caught up in this moment.
I find that hard to believe.
I get it. But that's part of why I think Nero is so enjoyed by a lot of people, is because he is motivated by this, like, this internal push, this internal, like, need, this desire to, I think most people couldn't even possibly understand what it's like to be this kind of a person, to have this, like, living inside of you. So it makes him his behaviors are very earnest, and they're very, they're almost, like, endearing. Yeah, he's, like, a bad guy, but he's not a bad guy.
Evil, or whatever you want to call that. I hate using such an extreme term.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's not his end goal. I don't know what he would do, actually, with power. It'd be like,
right?
The,
like, what are you gonna do,
with
man?
The car, preferably, right?
Yeah.
Like, what is his next step once he has
power? And
that's
what I'm saying. Like, that's his thing. Like, he has to find the power. He has to be at the absolute pinnacle of engineering achievement, of technological achievement. He has to beat Cid. He has to do all of these things. And this is how he's going to do it. Next steps, I don't know, is neither thing. And that's literally, like, kind of his whole vibe in this series.
So he's been booping his wristometer in the background, and he now has a reading, and he begins to cackle madly, and everyone stops what they're doing and looks over, going, what the fuck's going on here?
I fucking knew it.
And he begins to call out to himself, mainly.
Yes.
That the readings on his device are astounding. The power here is even greater than the Ultima weapon.
Like, yes, but do you even, like, know what that is, dude? Is this anything you could feasibly harness? Like, he's just, you know.
What he knows is that Une and Doga can't control the power through their blood pact with the Cloud of Darkness.
I mean, yeah, so he has, you know, like, 4D chest himself,
but
appropriately,
the
in that
question
regard.
I have, again, is they are independent people. They can make their own decisions, and they're not here to enable this power. They're here to shut it down.
See, yeah.
So how are they going to, or why are they going to help him, or how is he going to compel them to help him? That's what I'm not clear on before this happens.
Maybe he assumes that everybody else is also as power hungry as he is.
Maybe. I don't know, but we never find out, because as he's cackling and people are going, what the fuck, Nero? A voice interrupts us. From the rift, something speaks. Our covenant is everlasting. Une and Doga clones begin to materialize all around us. It's not spelled out, but I'm assuming they're possessed by Void Scent.
These are Nega clones.
Yeah.
They're like, instead of black hair, they have white hair.
Yes.
Instead of green dress, they have red dress.
Nega clones.
Nega clones.
So either they're being teleported out from like the clone storage hole somewhere in the tower, or they were in the rift. I don't know. Irrelevant.
They're just
ultimately
materializing. You kill them, they reappear. You kill them, they reappear.
I'm assuming there's more of them. There's like hundreds of clones somewhere.
Clone drones.
And a clone bank.
Yes.
So these clones begin to materialize around us, and everyone leaps into action except us, our character. The echo strikes us. We flash back to Emperor Zondi atop his throne. He speaks to mindless clones before him, absently projecting his thoughts. Soon, all the world will be united under Allegan rule. And yet, the memory of death grows ever more vivid, an endless void bereft of light and warmth. Though I may have defeated death, it did not leave me unscathed. Nay, its ravening claws have scarred my soul for eternity. Never shall I know peace. What worth is wealth and power when all must be inevitably consigned to nothingness? If man has nothing, he need not know the pain of loss. So, let there be nothing. Harvest more power, that the gate may be thrown full open. Let the cloud of darkness come and engulf the world, devouring all life, hopes, and dreams. Let all be returned to nothingness. So this is our flashback to Zondi sometime after his resurrection, before his fall, before his second fall.
Right. I mean, could we possibly interpret this as an act of mercy, benevolence, saving all the rest of his people from this horror, this memory of death, this promise of nothingness that awaits him that he has actually experienced as a person who's been resurrected from the dead?
I think that more it is a ultimately selfish act. It is a completely kind of arrogant, self-centered act.
Yeah,
to say,
like, if I've got to suffer, all y'all will suffer.
Or more that he has come to this conclusion. He was affected by his resurrection. He was not brought back in the same mental state as his departure. It might be some sort of post-death experience or anything else, or maybe the experiments, the eternal life that was granted to him that warped his psyche. We don't know. But he came back with this death obsession. He, I'm assuming, has taken his mental state and projected it across the entire world, or he doesn't give a shit about other people and he's going to fulfill his desire for nothingness, for oblivion, because it's what he thinks is right for himself.
Or it's what he thinks as, like, there's nowhere to go but this.
Yes.
This is peak. There's nothing beyond this until I completely blanket the world with void. I'm just going to be feeling unfulfilled.
And I think, though, he's looking to have his emptiness be purged, to replace his emptiness with literal nothing.
You know, misery loves company.
I wouldn't put it that way so much as taking his, you know, this void in him, pun not intended, and erasing it with true oblivion.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, as a way to numb it.
Yes.
Yeah. So he feels actually like he belongs or something. Some sort of, yeah, he's just like working through his fucking neuroses. As
at the world's expense.
All are. Oh, yeah. That too.
As we all are. Anyway, so the echo flashback ends. Back in the present, we have the clone wars unfolding all around us. Graha yells at us to get our head in the game. But a sensation strikes Graha too. He clutches his head, yelling, "Not now, damn it."
Yep, so, you know, he's got eyeball shit. We've got echo shit. We're like kind of down for the count at the moment.
Our allies, though, kick some serious ass.
Sid finally gets in there. Sid's fighting.
He's got a fucking techno sword.
Yeah.
And he's seriously mixing it up in there.
But he gets got by a ball of fire thrown by one of the clones throwing a black mage situation at him.
Oh, yeah. It's chaos.
Sid's taking him down. Two more reappear instead. He gets got by a fireball from the seventh other dude at the other end of the arena.
And Sid yells at Nero, "Was this part of your plan?"
Probably not.
Nero goes, "He didn't put up with Sid's arrogant face to play with worthless clones."
Yeah, he's like, I didn't even think because it's so beneath me as a concept. But so Sid is taken down.
He says, "Something is controlling them, a void scent and no ordinary one.
So Sid gets got by a fireball and he is prone on the ground and he is about to get got by a couple of other clones. And then Nero comes in and whoosh, whoosh, whoosh. It always tickles me to see Nero fighting like in battle. But to see him actually like, you know, engaging in like martial arts or whatever is.
This is a really good fight scene. He's got his gun blade, I'm assuming. He's blasting clones.
Yeah, he's slicing and dicing and blasting.
In a minute, he also hucks his sword into a clone and it's super sick.
It's fucking great. And like he is handling it.
Yeah.
He is handling it, but it doesn't matter because these clones keep, they go down, they come back up, they go down. We're got to do something else here.
Something happens. It's not good though. Tendrils of darkness burst forth from the rift. First, they strike Doga, pulling him into this purple tear in reality. Une is struck soon after, being dragged in as well. Nero sees this, and without the clones, he has no way of controlling the darkness here. This power is his. Focused again only on his personal gain, this power, he casts aside all caution and good sense and rushes for Une, trying to drag her back from the rift. On the way, he cuts through more clones, hucks his blade. He lunges for Une, and their two hands are stretched out, Une being pulled into the void, Nero reaching for her, trying to pull her back out.
Alas.
When tendrils burst from the void and encircle Nero as well. Both Une and Nero are sucked into the void behind Doga, and we are left now in silence atop the tower. No more clones, no Nero.
The portal is closed.
It's still there.
It's done. Well, it's still there, but now it's like this big eyeball-looking thing. And this is when it's... Well, I think it's been an eyeball-looking thing for a little while.
Yes.
More like a vagina, but...
A voice sounds out from the rift. The covenant shall be honored. I am the cloud of darkness. I shall devour your light and return this world to the void.
It is gone, along with our friends and Nero.
And Nero. We are left alone in silence, Sid, Graha, and ourselves. With nothing left to do now, we return to base camp to gather our thoughts. We report to Rambrose, who is a little bit overwhelmed by everything that we recount to him.
Right.
And he speculates that the rift was a void gate, and the larger the void sent, the larger the gate they need. Fortunately, Zande was not able to open a rift wide enough to allow the cloud of darkness to enter our world. And Sid asks if we can save the ones who were pulled through. Rambrose replies there's never been a case of someone going into the void through a void gate, only void sent coming out of them. We don't even know if the people beyond are still alive. But now Graha butts in, saying that we have to try. Not just because they're our friends, but we must help them complete their millennia-old mission. And we must end Zande's covenant. As long as it exists, our world is in danger.
He is right on all counts.
At this point, Graha clutches his right eye again. Rambrose notices this and asks about it. And Graha says he's not sure what's going on here. It feels like there's a memory there he can't quite recall. Something about his father.
Mm.
Rather, his father told him that the truth of the eye rests with Aleg, and one day Graha will find this truth. Sid backs up Graha's point. Though the odds are slim, we must try to save our allies and to shut down this rift once and for all. So Rambrose agrees. He says he'll consult his contacts and find out what they can about the Void Gate. And that's that for now. Any closing thoughts, Jen?
I was kind of captivated by this when I played it the first time. Because I was like battling with feelings of... like sympathy for Nero. Like bro got sucked into the void and I felt a certain way about it. And I'm like, okay, there's some shit going on. But also just the prospect of the void, that was terrifying to me. I assumed everybody was dead and I didn't like that. There was this huge pit in my stomach.
Uh-huh.
But now we wait.
So my recollection of this, it's been quite some time, but I recall being so annoyed by the Nero being shoved in here, despite everyone's hopeful good sense, that it broke my immersion and everything else. And I was kind of checked out of the story because I felt like the breach of plausibility had been so severe that it kind of undersold the story.
I could see that.
So also Une and Doga showing up out of nowhere with no context whatsoever.
Yeah, I felt more connection to Nero, which I guess makes sense because we've dealt with him longer, yeah. But not like in a positive way. And meanwhile, Une and Doga have been like positive the whole way through, but I've only known you for 7 minutes. So right. I don't like you got sucked to the void.
I mean, they give you a very brief history lesson, but in A Realm Reborn, you're being lore dumped on constantly, both too much and not enough at the same time. Somehow they give you the story of at least the salient bits of Aleg to their exact narrative, but there's no context to place this in. Like, what is this thing? What is this empire? Who is Zande? Proper nouns going everywhere. It's just so hard, at least it was for me, to follow what the fuck was going on. And it's not until I took the time to actually do the homework on this playthrough that I can actually understand the significance of who they are, why they are, and what's happening here.
Yeah.
So just like so many other A Realm Reborn things, understanding the greater picture helps so much. And actually making the on-screen events count.
Yes, and it also feels more significant when you're playing it. Like, it feels so much more satisfying going through everything. You're not just like, here's a fight.
Yeah.
You know, obviously we feel, I think, more connected to characters that exhibit some kind of unique personality.
And also, for characters that outlast the storyline, we got more connection to them, period. So we kind of backport that connection, even though they're not maybe well introduced so far.
So, yeah, I felt like I wish I felt more about Une and Doga, but they're played so flatly. And also we've barely known them. So I didn't really have like a strong reaction to them getting sucked into a void portal. If Nero was like, ah, fuck.
They could find a way to have hangout time with them, either like a gray quest or something. I know it's hard to do things that are like time locked because they don't want to lock out quests after you do another quest. That's not how the game rolls, which I appreciate. At the same time, though, something that maybe was not mandatory, but also gave you more hangout time with them, or maybe make a plot relevant hangout time just to actually bond before you suck them into the void. Something to make them be people more.
As opposed to literally, like, they just walk up on a trail as we're having this conversation. They're like, hello, we would like to help you with your crystal tower endeavor. And as soon as they walked up, because it's been a couple of years since I did it the first time, I'm like, oh, right, these people are like, they're clones, right? Because they have this affectation that they're like robotic. They're not real people. They totally are. They're still like people. They still do have like a, you know, they have a past, a present, they have memories, they have friends, they have, you know, personalities and stuff. And it bothered me that these pivotal characters, they walk up, they're like, yeah, we'll open this door for you. I'm like, it's got to be more than that. You know, indicate that they have personalities at all, that they're like unique as opposed to just a face that makes sounds and another man face that makes sounds.
But text, actually.
And text, right. They don't even make sounds. There's no humor. There's no heart. They're just like literally encyclopedias that look like people.
I agree. It's hard to tell if that's the A Realm Reborn writing or if that's their personality that's making them so flat. But
I think it's more of the writing. Like there could be something there, but there's already kind of like a lot, and also not enough time really, unless these purposefully, like you said, made like a moment for them in the series.
Yeah, but I will say though, I do appreciate them more now. One, from having done all the research for our whole intro and kind of getting where they fall into the overall story of Aleg that is not played in game, that is not displayed in game. That gives me a lot more context. I can then kind of fill in the holes that the game leaves around them and appreciate them more. Also, due to certain other content, these guys have been further contextualized besides how they appear in these cutscenes. If you know, you know. Otherwise, see you in some years. Anyway, though, Jim, my other thought, aside from that, is that Graha has calmed down a lot in this second part of the story.
Yeah.
He's dropped his fucking edgelord shit. He's now being a team player. He's now a very kind of innocent feeling, enthusiastic, maybe a bit too good-hearted. Not in a...
He's too wholesome?
It's not meant to be like a criticism, more like
sure.
he is...
Yeah. He's like naive.
Yeah, you know? He's like, he's not yet been tempered by the world.
No, 100%. Yeah. Yes, he's like brand new. He's fresh out of the box.
Which is kind of the same message that we got from the first intro, but it doesn't fucking suck. So
so now I think like the weight of everything that's happening and how it relates to his personal history is starting to like hit him. He's no longer just reading about it. He's
sure.
living it.
And also he's got other things to focus his energies on besides trying to impress us or whatever with this dumb
yeah,
shit.
Yeah, it's probably been, let's say, like a month or whatever since we did Labyrinth of the Ancients. They've had some time. We've done our strength training, and he's in a professional environment, and so he's had to like chill the fuck out.
Don't know about that one, but anyway. Yeah, so next time we are closing out the Crystal Tower series with the World of Darkness. See you, Jen.
And that will do it for today's episode. Thank you all so, so much for listening. If you want to get in touch with us, you can at podreturnffxiv@gmail.com or check the show notes for our Discord. Join up, talk about the game, talk about your glams, talk about your life, whatever. And also join us for group runs. So if you ever want to do that, that's how you would join. And then we also have our Patreon. It's just patreon.com/podreturnffxiv. And for $1 a month, you can get access to some bonus content that we release every so often about some of the seasonal events they do in the game. You know, some also just like outside of the game peripheral shit that is fun and exciting, like the trading card game, etc. We're also talking a lot about Final Fantasy XI. In the Vanity of Van Splinter series. Anyway, check it out if you want. Otherwise, we hope you enjoyed the episode. Have a good day or night, and we will see you next time.